Most business podcasts today focus on the 1%, the nationally known larger-than-life personalities, entrepreneurs, and celebrities with interesting business stories. Business Exit Stories shares the stories of the other 99% of unheralded entrepreneurs that own successful companies in manufacturing, retail, logistics, telecommunications, construction, food service, and in every imaginable type of business in every state and city around the country. These are the stories told by the deal makers that facilitate exits. These are the mergers and acquisition specialists, business brokerages, financial and wealth planners, CPAs, appraisers, and attorneys. By listening to their stories, you'll learn what the entrepreneurs and business owners they represent did right and what they did wrong when it comes to exiting their business through a sale or a merger. In fact, you'll not only learn how they avoided disastrous exits, but how they positioned their companies for an out-of-the-ballpark home run when they exited their business. And here's your host, Marvin L. Storm.
This is Marvin L. Storm with the Business Exit Stories podcast. Today, we're interviewing and talking to Sean Davis. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Marvin. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you take a few minutes and introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your background and a little bit about your brokerage business?
All right. Be happy to here. My name is Sean Davis. I work for Link Business in Los Angeles, California. A little bit about my background. This is probably my third or fourth career, I think, business brokering, but everyone prior to that was kind of complimentary to get me to where I am here. Started out initially, I got a computer science degree. I was a systems engineer for some of the largest tech firms in the Bay Area when I lived up there. Seagate, Applied Materials, Intel. I mean, I worked for all the big ones. So my understanding of technology is very, complementary to what we do here in the marketing efforts that we do. After technology, that career ended, I got into real estate. I had my own real estate investment firm for a number of years, and we did everything from buying land and splitting it up to building spec homes and fixer-uppers, or as my wife affectionately called them, flipping dips. So I got a lot of exposure in the real estate world getting my license and brokering my own transactions, both on the financing side as well as the real property itself. That translated in or evolved into a financial services role. Dealt a lot with commodities initially, and then became licensed as the financial advisor, and dealt with a lot of insurance products and other types of investment vehicles for clients, and capital gains, tax deferral strategies, things of that nature that we would help business owners that are selling or commercial real estate owners that were selling either their business or their property when they were suffering from a capital gains hit. And that more or less just kind of opened the door to this, having my own business for a number of years and just dealing with the transactional aspects and having the technology background. It kind of all created this synergy where, we could jump into the business brokerage world and just be very, very effective with it. And here we are today.
Well, that's great. Sounds like the background you have lends well to facilitate and help people that have businesses that need to exit. Well, today we want to talk a little bit about some of those transactions you've been involved in, that some worked out well and as planned, and maybe some that didn't and kind of went sideways. And why don't we start today with a couple of those transactions that probably should have worked out, but for whatever reason did not. Can you share one or two examples of transactions that kind of went sideways on you and didn't end up as the business owner wanted to have them end up?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. And unfortunately, there's everyone always has that scenario that just didn't work out. I mean, we always want to end every relationship on a positive note, and not everyone can work out that way. And here's a couple of examples of ones that unfortunately didn't end up winning in the end. This is more related to, I guess, I get asked this question a lot as a business broker: is when is a good time to sell? And there's a lot of questions or blanks that need to be filled in order to be able to answer that question properly. But in this particular situation, you'll see that, the good time to sell was, sooner rather than later. So I was approached by a gentleman a while back that had been owned and operated a wholesale distributor of brush products, hairbrushes, makeup brushes, and was very, very successful. Owned it for, I think it was 40 plus years. and was in every major box chain store you can think of: Costco, Walgreens, Walmart, CVS, Kroger, grocery stores. You know, all over the country. A lot of business. Did very, very, very well. And so, getting back to when is a good time to sell. Well, this gentleman is in, is elderly now. I want to say he's probably in his 80s at the time that I started interacting with him. But prior to that, I would say about, 8-9 years ago, maybe, he's probably in his 70s at this point. Business has been going better than it ever has before. And he gets approached by a company that wants to acquire him, offers $5 million for this business. Very, very successful business.
Do you know if this was $5 million in cash or were there terms, or do you know that?
The terms were $5 million cash, but he would have to stay on as a consultant, I believe, for 5 years, I think is what they wanted, right? Because obviously he knew what he was doing to get to the business to this point. They wanted to leverage that in addition to buying, his revenue stream and his customer base.
Well, that's, cash deals aren't all that common.
Yeah, no, in this particular case, the company that was acquiring, just they saw a lot of potential there. And again, this gentleman is very, very well known in the industry. Going to all the trade shows, he's kind of known as the godfather of the brush business. So I think there was a lot more goodwill and intellectual knowledge that was being purchased. And so that was the way that they wanted to structure is like, you're going to be a consultant. We'll pay you a modest, salary while you work here, but we're keeping you for 5 years in addition to buying your business. And end of the day, his response was, why would I do that? I'm making more money than I've ever made before. I'm as young as I can possibly be at heart. I'm just going to keep on going. And so at the end of the day, he turned down the transaction and went about his business. Well, about a year later, he's in his warehouse doing some work. He falls off a ladder and breaks his back. And being an elderly gentleman, you don't really, even a young buck would not heal quickly from, such a significant injury. And so it took him several years to get back on his feet to a point where he could actually, give attention to the business again. Well, during that time, the business went to nothing. Literally, might have been doing $10,000 or $15,000 in gross sales a year at that point, and just didn't have much other than inventory available for the business. And he came to the realization, he's like, now he's in his 80s, he's mobile, but he's still suffering the consequences from a very significant injury. And he just does not have the mobility or the energy to put back into the business that he once had to get it to where it was. So he's like, now I need to sell. Well, he calls us and we go out and we visit with him and kind of look over things. And I hear the story and I want to help this guy out. I understand his situation and I feel for him. And also there's a significant story here. He had a thriving, booming business with huge customers. He's got, contacts in these large box stores. Somebody might be able or may want to take that on and see if they can breathe some life back into the company. It's been very, very difficult to find that needle in a stack of needles. There's somebody out there that would be willing to do it. We just haven't located them as of yet. I'm still trying to help this individual. But it's just not looking good at this point because there's no revenue stream coming in. There's not much of a business there. Books and records are, this gentleman didn't take advantage of technology. In fact, when I asked for the financial records, about 2 weeks later, I get this box that was UPS to my office. Normally when I get that, I get an email with a bunch of PDF attachments, right? So kind of give you an idea of how the accounting took place up to this point. It's pretty archaic. So it's just a very, very difficult project to take on. And as I mentioned, it's just not something that we have a lot of hopeful prospects for at this point, but you never know. Somebody maybe even listening to your show might be interested in something like this and give us a call. But at the end of the day, as hard as that may be to consider, the best time to sell a business is when you're on top. Right. People don't want to, buyers of businesses are looking for something that they can grow or that, they can, kind of just pick up right where you left off and keep things going and, and making, a decent living off of it, something that is on the decline or dead, there's just not a lot of interest in those out there. So, obviously you have a lot of other factors to take into consideration when it's time, financially, how are you set up? Are you, you know, are you going to be okay with the income that you're going to be receiving after you, you know, after you sell off the business? I mean, there's a number of considerations that you need to take into account, but if it's possible, sell the business when it's doing its best. That's when you're going to get the most value for your dollar. You're going to get the most interest from buyers out there, and it's going to be a lot easier to market and sell a business that's doing well versus one that was doing well and is no longer.
Well, I guess the big takeaway here is, as you said, there is a right time and a wrong time to go to market with the business, and the dynamics change tremendously when you've kind of peaked and you're headed down a revenue decline. Buyers view a business entirely different when you've had a year or two of revenue decline, become very much more circumspect on what the opportunities for the business are. So in this case, he's riding high. That was probably the right time to sell there. And $5 million in your pocket and a consulting contract, that's a pretty sweet deal.
It wasn't a bad one. I hate to pour salt in the wound, but you know, a lot of times when we have conversations to get updates about what's going on and, you know, what are the prospects, you know, the conversation always ends, "Sean, I should have sold to that gentleman in Texas." You know, and that was, yeah, I hate to say it. I hate to laugh at it, because, you know, but at the end of the day, yeah, you know, hindsight's 20/20, 100% of the time. You'll never make a wrong decision if you can go back in time, right?
Yep. Hindsight, 20/20 hindsight vision. That's a truism if there ever was one. Well, how about another transaction, maybe similar or maybe a little bit different than this one, that you could share with us that didn't have a happy ending?
Yeah, I have another example. And this one here was, we were really excited to take this particular project on because it was a flower shop that had been in business for over 50 years. And it was a staple in the community. Everybody that was, all the businesses or anybody that had lived in this area for more than 10 years knew of this company. The branding that they had done and just the name recognition alone, you know, we were thinking, wow, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be a fun one. And this lady here, she was elder. I want to say she's probably in her 60s. She's getting ready to retire. And she was the third owner of this particular company. And, you know, basically, you know, she had been slowing down as time had come going on. So when she first bought it, it was the main source of income for her and her family. And then as the kids grew up and you know, left the nest, the income requirements became less and less. So she put less and less effort into it. And so it got to a point where she wasn't really catering to the retail walk-in crowd. So again, because it was such a staple in the community, a lot of the local businesses like churches and the municipalities, like fire departments and the hospitals and police departments, I mean, these were, they just had our speed dial. Every time they needed flowers for any type of situation, they were the ones that, or she was the one that they called. And so at that point, you know, she had enough business coming in from these types of clients that it was enough to pay the bills. So there was really no desire to put in a lot of extra work to grow the business or expand it or, you know, anything of that nature. So she just kind of left it at that. And you know, she realized that when it came down to sell, she wasn't going to get, you know, top dollar for it, but maybe, you know, she can walk away with, at least with something, as opposed to just shutting it down. And then, you know, young blood, you know, new energy, whatever, however you want to describe it, comes in and maybe makes it, you know, a very, very profitable company once again.
So what we have here is a long-term business, third owner, well-established in the community. A lot of people knew of her, and the phone would ring day after day with probably pretty sizable order. And she didn't necessarily have to do a lot of marketing or cater to the walk-in trade that a lot of flower shops depend on. She had a very steady book of business and relied on that and never really focused on all of the things that a traditional small-time flower shop would do as far as advertising and being active in the community and, you know, probably spending some online marketing dollars. She was, I guess you could say, just coasting at that point in time.
That would be the perfect way to describe it. And it was really unfortunate too, because the location was probably one of the most desirable for a business like this. A lot of traffic, good anchor stores nearby. I mean, there was just really no reason to not, you know, everyone's got their reasons, but I said, you know, from a business perspective, there's no reason this business shouldn't have been doing a lot better.
If I'm a buyer looking for a business and I have my checklist and I like the flower business and I go down my checklist, I say commercial clients, check, you know, good location, check, reputation, check, time in the business, check. Sounds like a great opportunity for somebody. What happened?
That's what we thought.
Obviously, things didn't have a happy ending here. So kind of explain a little bit and share with us how it kind of unfolded.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And one of the things that we do, especially for somebody that's making this type of transition, is, you know, we want to try to make sure that, you know, it's a cooperative effort, right? I mean, there's only so much that we can do as a business broker to market a business and you know, bring in, you know, qualified buyers and try to, you know, get a transaction done. There's a lot of work that needs to be done by the seller. And one of the key components that we try to emphasize is business continuity. Right. Just because you have your business listed for sale doesn't mean it's sold. Right. So don't check out. Right. You know, you need to show up to work. You need to keep the place clean. You got to try to get that revenue stream, you know, continuously coming in. You know, you need to show any potential buyer that if they're going to acquire this business, they can just come right in and they can start making money on day one. Well, in this particular case, the exact opposite happened. Once she signed those listing agreements, you know, she started traveling. You know, we would find all these buyers and kind of have them, you know, they would either want to stop by and be like a secret shopper just to check out the operation, or maybe they want to drive by and kind of see the foot traffic and just kind of get a general idea of what it would be like, you know, if they had owned this particular location. And every time they went, you know, every time we sent a buyer by to go do that, the place was closed. Being in the window, there's boxes all over the place. I mean, it looked like it literally had been shut down for months. And, you know, as far as they're concerned, they're calling me back up. I was like, is this place even operating? You know, what's going on here? You know,
so let's get a picture of what's going on here. So you're telling me that, you know, once she decided to sell, you sat down and explained the process and what was going to be required. She executed the listing agreement, is all excited about selling her business, and then kind of takes a vacation, kind of checks out. And to the extent that she's closing up shop and not actually being there during business hours is what you're telling me.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's just the probably one of the worst things that you can do when you're actively trying to sell a business is to give the perception that it's shut down. Right? If someone wants to buy a shut down business, they want to buy an operating business that's making money. And so that just wasn't the image that these buyers that were going by, that's not what they were receiving.
I guess, you know, since she had such a reputation in the area and everyone knew about the company and the business and they needed flowers, they called. And so in her mind, retail was probably an afterthought. You know, being open was an afterthought. I mean, that's kind of the impression I'm getting here. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, I would believe so. But at the end of the day, it was a retail shop.
Yeah.
So she kind of maybe shift her focus in her mind on how the business was functioning. But that's not what was being sold. That's not what was being marketed. And that definitely was not what we were, you know, told when we were engaging in the process. So, I mean, they had refrigerators, they had, you know, storefront, lots of, you know, you walk into flower shops, they sell more than flowers. They got vases and pictures and, you know, just little trinkets all over the place. And when we came in, it was a cute little shop. It was perfect. It was everything that we thought it would be. And then, again, once we took on the listing, all of that had changed.
And you said, as I recall, this was a great retail location. I mean, if you marketed it properly with right displays, you know, you would probably drive a lot of foot traffic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That's probably one of the attractive things for a buyer looking at the business when they see a grade A prime location. That gets people excited.
Absolutely. And we did. We had a lot of excitement about it. And, you know, even a couple of the buyers, they were okay with the fact that it was closed for all of those reasons, right? You know, you got good branding, it's staple in the community, great location. And then, you know, it's like, okay, well, we'd like to meet with the owner. Okay, well, she's in Europe for 2 weeks. So the shop's going to be closed the whole time. She's not accessible. And then, you know, buyers are, you know, they're investors. They're looking for something. And, you know, they eventually just move on if they can't get what they need from this one. And, you know, that kind of sets the expectation for the rest of the process, right? If I can't even get a meeting initially because I'm inquiring about it, what's it going to be like if I need to get financial records or what, you know, we need help negotiating a lease or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, anything that any of the aspects of the transaction, that, you know, moving forward that require the seller to be involved. If you can't even set an initial meeting, then, you know, that's kind of what's going through the buyer's mind. Yeah, this is probably going to be too much of a headache. Let's just find something else.
Normally, a buyer wants to have the seller around for some time after the sale for help and consulting and the insight and how to make this transition. And most likely, in their mind, that was not probably going to happen. And that can be a deal breaker.
Another very good point. Absolutely. Yeah. If you can't even get an initial meeting, how, you know, is she going to answer the phone if I need help? Or, you know, will she come in and kind of show me some things that I need to be aware of? Or all these what ifs at that point, and you get too many what ifs, you just move on to the next one.
In the situation like this, in both of these situations that you're really talking about, it's kind of unfortunate or sad in some way that these businesses have been around for decades. You know, you said one had been around for 40 years and the other for 50 or more years. And all of that goodwill and community involvement, branding that takes decades to build up, to create all that goodwill and real value, enterprise value in a business just sort of evaporates into thin air over time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty sad when you look at it from that point of view too. It's more than just the business that goes away or a lack of revenue from the sale of the business to the seller. But yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of these companies, again, they're staples in the community that are no longer there, you know, because of it.
And how did this end? Did it actually get sold or what happened?
No, actually what happened in this particular situation, the lease ended and the seller did not want to renew or even, you know, consider maybe doing a month to month till we could find a buyer. And, you know, she finally just came to the realization, like, I'm just not engaged in this process. I'm just going to shut down shop. And that's what happened. Out of business.
Wow. Well, people go out of business for a lot of different reasons, but this is an unusual set of circumstances where totally avoidable, it sounds like, just because of the engagement and focus on the business. I mean, there's no reason the business couldn't have been relaunched by someone else, and she was the third owner and a fourth owner coming in and take it to the next generation. Oh, that's really sad.
We had several extremely motivated, qualified buyers very interested. And at the end of the day, shutting down the business was the outcome of that scenario there. So yeah, there's only so much you can do, right? I mean, at the end of the day, again, it's a cooperative effort that we're, you know, as a business broker, we are relying on the seller or the business owner to perform a lot of functions. And one of them in this particular example is business continuity. You need to act like you're not selling your business, that your goal is to grow 5% next year or 10% or whatever your historical goals were, and keep that process moving forward. Because that's going to, one, it's going to be very attractive to a buyer. And two, it's, you know, if you're in that mindset, there's, you know, a lot that you can share with the buyer to give them all the material that they need to make a good buying decision if it's the right fit for them.
Sean, do you find it somewhat of a challenge when you sit down with someone that has a business and they actually make the decision to sell? Do you find that most sellers of the business can stay engaged? How big of a challenge is that?
I would say that's a rare situation that I just described. I've never come across one that extreme, but I thought it was a good example for the purpose of the interview here. I would say most business owners realize what's at stake, right? It's a lifetime of work and it's a big decision. They're making a transition from being a business owner to retired or moving on to another project or whatever it is that their goals are. And so, you know, who wants to walk away from a lifetime of work with nothing to show for it? And so when you kind of sit down and explain to them, you know, this is the possibility. I use this story when I'm talking to potential sellers, right? So look, this is what we're going to need from you. And this is what could possibly happen if we don't follow these guidelines and these rules that we're setting down right now. And so they get it, you know, I get a lot of cooperation from the majority of our sellers because of that. You know, they want to make sure they want top dollar. They want to try to sell their business as quickly as possible. Although we take a lot of the front end work, you know, out of their view, there's still, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done, and there's a lot of stresses and unknowns and concerns during the sale process for a seller, and trying to make sure that we you know, have all the pieces put in place so that we can, one, get top dollar, sell it as quickly as possible, present all the information available to the buyer in an efficient manner. You know, those are all things that can, you know, make the process a lot less stressful and a lot more, you know, easier for the seller.
Good points and good sharing of ideas on what you need to do. And these are two examples of things that you probably shouldn't do, both based on timing of selling a business here. Well, let's shift gears, Sean, and could you share a couple of examples and stories of transactions that went well and had a much happier ending?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to end on a good note. And these stories are great. I love sharing these ones here because it just kind of shows what the possibilities are, right? So this next example here, it's going to kind of go back to, when is the best time to sell a business? And so I had spoken to this particular business owner here. She was the second owner of a silkscreen and embroidery business. And she started literally straight out of high school back in, I think, the late 70s. And she took over from the original owner in 1990 and has been operating it as an owner ever since. And so she's older, but not as elder as maybe some of the previous two examples. But nonetheless, you know, she's ready. You know, she figured it was time. And so when we initially spoke with her, it wasn't necessarily about listing her business for sale, but, you know, about, you know, some of the questions were like, what do we need to do to prepare? You know, when is the good time? And you know, so that, you know, some of the very common questions that someone that is doing proper planning would ask.
So, Sean, tell me a little bit more about the silk screening business, because in my mind, you know, when I think of a silk screening business, I think of it being kind of a small shop and people walking in and kind of in a retail environment and looking over some of the shirts and maybe having a custom shirt made. Is that what this business was?
No. I think it initially started out like that, but then once my client took over, she had a much different vision and transformed it substantially. So they didn't have a retail outlet, right? So no walk-in traffic, anything of that nature. So they sold primarily to organizations. A couple of their biggest clients, for example, were like theme parks. They would make uniforms or maybe custom hoodies or hats or backpacks for the gift shops with whatever attraction that they might be promoting at the time. So very, very consistent, very large orders from these organizations. Another one of the customers that the transportation industry, train stations, bus stations, airports, things of that nature, in some of these major hub cities, you know, like maybe San Francisco or Dallas or Chicago, maybe Orlando, they would make all of the city specific shirts and hats, backpacks, you know, cups, you know, thermoses, you name it. I mean, they make all kinds of stuff here. And so that's primarily what they do. So they're just more of like a wholesale manufacturer at this point, as opposed to a retail outlet.
And so it sounds like a pretty sizable business. So I assume that they have a large production facility, and you know, it sounds like they're dealing all over the country. So they probably had a sales team that reached out and worked with these airports or bus stations or train stations around the country and the gift shops there. It sounds like what you're talking about.
Yeah. She has a traveling sales team. They're all over the country all the time, you know, trying to drum up new business. Production managers, they got logistics managers, design team. So, you know, when the customers call up and they say, well, we want something that looks like this, well, you know, they got to come up with the artwork, get it approved. And so that she has a team of people that do all that. So her role more or less in the business is, you know, catering to some of the larger clientele to make sure that they're happy, because that's your bread and butter for the most part. And then just overseeing general operations, making sure that, you know, all the teams have the resources that they need, or, you know, whatever struggles they're having, come up with solutions for them. So that's kind of more or less her role. So she's not in the trenches, actually silk screening shirts. She's running a very successful business, you know, at an executive level.
So she approaches you and says, I'm thinking about selling. And you might even share a couple of stories of when is a good time to sell. And since her business sounds like it was getting better year after year, a good time to sell is when you have increasing sales.
Yeah, again, when that question came up, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, right? You know, so okay, well, you know, picture yourself without this revenue stream? How does that affect your lifestyle? Are you set up well enough to not require this income anymore? You know, what are your goals? If you sell, what are you going to do? You know, try to like put them in the mindset of like, okay, I already sold the business. Now what does my life look like? And as we were going through that process, you know, I mean, she had already, you know, had the answers to a lot of these questions. She didn't have to figure them out. You know, she's like, hey, we talked to our finance guy. You know, once my husband and I retire, he tells us we're going to make more money in retirement than we are working every day, right? So we're set there. Real estates are paid for. Cars are paid for. You know, they got good investments bringing in, you know, good income. So, okay, well, financially, you're good. You know, what do you see yourself doing? Yeah, you know what? I always wanted to travel. I've been so busy. You know, I'd like to see the world. Maybe go see Europe or go spend some time in Asia. I'm like, okay, well, great. You know, you got at least some short-term plans. You know, someone will tell me a little bit about the business. You know, how, you know, what did it look like 5 years ago? What's it look like today? What does it look like 5 years from now? And she's like, Sean, ever since I've taken over, you know, my business is doing better year after year after year. We're growing, you know, at a pretty consistent rate. Your business is great. And I said, look, you know, you might want to consider selling as soon as possible. And I gave the example of my my client with the brush company. And, you know, that really touched home. You know, she realized, okay, look, you don't know what's going to happen, right? Getting out on top, that's not a bad thing to do. Even though your company's doing well, that might not be the case next year. You know, it could be changes in the economy, changes in your health. I mean, who knows, right? So she took it to heart. 5 days later, we're marketing her business for sale.
Well, and I imagine that the outcome is going to be good, given the dynamics of what she's built. You know, she's not integral to the business, and she's built a good team around her. So all the boxes are checked to make it a profitable exit for her.
We had to beat the buyers off with a stick on this one. I mean, it was just too pretty. Literally, I mean, I was getting 5-10 inquiries a day on this one. It was just, you know, everybody wants that. Every business broker has that dream business that they want to sell. I mean, this one came in a perfect box with a nice, pretty bow on it. And it was just too easy not to promote.
There's a good lesson in that, is that if you want to be in that situation where you create a competitive, almost a bidding environment for your business, you need to plan for that. It doesn't happen automatically.
And absolutely.
People that show up at the last minute and sales that are kind of sliding, you're unlikely to get that type of dynamic going. So, Sean, any other great stories where all the boxes were checked when it came time to exit that had a happy ending?
Yeah, another really one that I like a lot, especially for the exit strategy. I think this is going to be a very good example here for your audience, based on, you know, the topics that you're discussing. And it's preparing your business for sale. All right, so I had a client that owned a staffing agency, executive staffing firm, and she started it from scratch. You know, she, you know, basically her first job, she worked for a staffing company 40 some years ago, and it was a pretty hostile environment from, you know, her description, especially for women back in that day. It wasn't, you know, wasn't very kind to working women, especially in this particular industry. And she finally, she's like, look, I had enough. The only way I'm going to get out of this environment and be in this industry is if I start my own business. And lo and behold, that's what she did 30 some plus years ago. And every year, again, just kind of got better and better and better. She was really, really good at building relationships and, providing, you know, top quality candidates for these companies that were coming to her. And she had like a nice little niche too. So, you know, you got some of these like national brands like Manpower. That's the only one that keeps coming to my mind, but there's other ones out there, and they'll place a job for any company anywhere, right? Her business specifically focused on logistics, you know, transportation, delivery, shipping, you know, things of that nature. And so she became pretty much a household name within that industry group. Anybody that, you know, that either works in a logistic division or has a logistic business, they're very aware of who this individual is. And she's the go-to person for, you know, for finding either executive level or even, warehouse level people. The bread and butter of the business was temp to hire. And what that means, it's an indefinite term. She had some employees that, you know, were temp to hire for 5 years. You know, so it's just something that, especially here in California, It's very, very common for companies to take advantage of placement agencies because they're not taking on the risk and the liability of employment, which can get pretty dicey, you know, based on the laws and regulations here in California. So outsourcing that task is very desirable depending on your company's needs. But however, there would be, you know, a need where, hey, we need a, you know, a C-level executive to fill this position. We're just going to hire permanently, and you know, they just get a fee or commission for placing that. Whereas the temp to hire would be, let's say this an employee gets paid $20 a company, $30 an hour, and that's how they made their margins. And so a very, very, very successful company that she had built up over the course of 30 plus years. So the time came. She realized, you know what, I've been doing this long enough. I'm set. You know, she answered all of her questions that I would, you know, when someone that I would ask. If someone asked me when was the right time to sell, she knew right now is the right time to sell. I'm going out on top. I'm financially set. I'm good to go. I am ready to move on. And so she understands business continuity, right? So she wanted to make sure that the transition took place as seamlessly as possible. So for the couple of years prior to listing the business, she made some very gradual changes that were almost unnoticeable, but they were very strategic. One of them being is, you know, reducing her involvement in the day-to-day operations, right? So she's at the point now where she goes to the office every day. She's more just a figurehead. You know, she goes in there and she's online shopping, or she's, you know, she's like, you know, she's got a dog, you know, so she's like, you know, planning her next dog adventure. And she's more or less just planning out personal activities for herself on a day-to-day basis and does very, very, very little for the operations. So she's delegated and she's trained and she's put the infrastructure in place so that when the time comes and a new owner takes over, there's not much to hand off, right? Everybody already knows what they need to do. And so she, you know, all the clients that she was dealing with on a regular basis, she slowly but surely started handing those off so that they still felt like they were being taken care of. She's always an escalation point still if need be, but there's never been a need. So that transition actually worked very, very well. And so now there's, you know, managers and agents and things of that nature that are taking over the customers that she used to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
So in this situation, Sean, what you're telling me is that the owner very thoughtfully and strategically started thinking about an exit several years in advance, kind of outlined what probably needed to be done in her mind, probably reached out and did some research and figured out things that needed to be done to position the business for sale, and then slowly started to make those transitions. As you said, they kind of went unnoticed. They were gradual. And when it came time to get the listing agreement and start focusing on an actual plan to sell, again, I used the example of all the boxes for exiting a business had been checked, or most of them had been checked. And she probably also created an environment where there were a lot of interested people that would be highly motivated to take a deep dive into her business.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, most of them, it's kind of an interesting little niche on this particular industry. One of the biggest concerns is liability insurance or workman's comp insurance. I'm sorry, not liability, workman's comp insurance, because they're the you know, the placements are the employees of this particular company. One of the things that, you know, if you're trying to start a new employment agency, you get charged the highest rates. And so her company's been around for so long and had literally zero incidents. She only hires quality people for her clients, that her workman's comp insurance policy is literally, you know, one of the best rates that you can possibly get in the industry. So most of our buyers that we had were actually staffing agencies that were wanting to more or less do a stock sale so they can assume that workman's comp rate and be able to translate that into their existing business, as well as take on the clientele of the business that was being sold. So, I mean, it's very substantial. I mean, if you have hundreds of employees that you're placing out there, I mean, your workman comp, you know, it's a huge, huge expense on the books. And so a lot of companies out there, they were looking specifically for companies that had good policy records. And you know, that was one of the things that made it very attractive. And again, that's one of the things that she did to prepare for the sale, was to make sure, you know, over time that she only dealt with quality individuals, quality customers, quality candidates, And, you know, just over time, that just translated into a more desirable business for someone to take over.
So you made an interesting comment there a few minutes ago when you were talking about how the transaction was structured, because traditionally folks do not want to assume liability and they don't want a stock sale. They want an asset sale. And could you kind of explain the difference between an asset and a stock sale and the reasons for each?
Sure, absolutely. And the reasons for each may vary depending on the circumstances. And obviously, I just gave an example of one. But an asset sale essentially is where it is exactly what it sounds. You're just buying the assets of a company. Let's say ABC Corporation is going to sell their company to XYZ Corporation. Well, once the transaction is closed, ABC Corporation is, for all intents and purposes, gone, right? They're shut down. So all of the liability that was associated with that company stays with ABC, and XYZ is not, they're not taking on any of the risk. They're just essentially, you know, for lack of a better word, they're buying the racks in the warehouse. They're buying the cash register in the front, you know, and they're paying a price for that. And everything has a value, even your customer list, your goodwill, all of those things are considered assets of the business, and they're just taking those, but none of the liability that comes along with it.
You can see why that's attractive, you know, depending on the type of business, that can be a very traditional thing and a low risk thing to do.
Yeah, I would say 95% of our transactions are going to be asset sales. Just for that very reason, you know, most buyers do not want to take on the liability unless there's a good justification for it. Again, I just kind of gave an example of one, but a stock sale, essentially what you're doing there is everything stays in place, right? You're just buying the controlling interest of this particular company. So all your bank accounts, all of your accounts payable, your accounts receivable, any lawsuits that you may be going through or coming down the pipeline that you're not even aware of. I mean, anything that good, bad, ugly, indifferent, when you do a stock sale, you're buying it all. And so as you mentioned before, most people necessarily aren't, most buyers are not interested in a stock sale because there's a lot of, you know, maybe there is known risk, but there's a lot of unknown risk. You know, you might have somebody that slipped and fell on your property a year ago, and they're dealing with a lawyer trying to prepare their case, and even the seller doesn't know. They have no clue that this is even going on. And then 6 months after you buy the company and acquire the stock, now you're getting served a notice for some type of a claim that you are responsible for, whether you think you should be or not. You bought the company, it's yours. And so in this particular case, where we're talking about the staffing agency, again, the workman's comp policy is such a substantial financial hit. And in the cases of the buyers that we're dealing with, it was worth it to assume that liability to get them the savings, because not only are they getting a good rate for the customers that the businesses are, that comes with it, they can essentially cancel their policy for their existing business and take advantage of the rates and the reputation that the company for sale has. And that could be tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, depending on the size of your company. It's very, very substantial. So then again, it's worth it to take on, unknown debt collectors or unknown, lawsuit liabilities that may be coming down the pipe in order to take advantage of that.
Well, that is a really strategic advantage. The value of the business would be reflected in that strategic component of the business. Well, Sean, this has been delightful. You certainly have brought to us some good examples that people in our audience that are thinking about selling our business at some point in time, some of the things they need to think about as far as timing, the type of structure that they may want to deploy in the sales transaction, whether they're an asset sale or a stock sale. These are all good takeaways from this interview. I do appreciate you taking the time. Sean, if someone wanted to reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to get a hold of you?
I've got a couple of ways. You could check out our website at buyorsellbusiness.com. Again, I work for Link Business, but that's just my team. I have a lot of resources available to me, and you can contact me directly as well, too. Sean.Davis@linkbusiness.com.
Thank you for taking your time today and sharing us the stories of both successful and not so successful exits. Until next time, we'll see you on our next episode of Business Exit Stories.
Thank you, Marvin.
Join us on our next episode when our guests will share more stories of how entrepreneurs, founders, and business owners have exited their businesses and learn about what to avoid and what you need to do to successfully position your business for a successful exit. If you enjoyed this podcast, take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts so aspiring entrepreneurs everywhere can find us. If you wish to reach out to any of our guests, please visit our website at www.businessexitstories.com, where you can find more information. Join us next time for more Business Exit Stories.